There were no customers in the ladies' emporium at the moment, so Megan was using the time to unpack the 3 boxes of material that had come in on special order this morning. She had just taken the last bolt of gingham out when the telegrapher, Mr. Murchison, stepped into her store.
Yes, Mr. Murchison, what can I do for you?
She saw he was holding a telegram in his hand.
Oh, well, what is it?
I don't know, it may be nothing, but it's something I thought you might want to know.
What? What is it?
I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm going to share a couple of telegrams with you, seeing as I think you might have a special interest. This first one was from Duff to Elmer Gleason. It came in last week.
He handed the telegram to Megan.
Elmer, have run into a bit of a problem. Put Sky on the train. Send him to me in Fremont, Nebraska. Duff.
Well, Elmer didn't just put Sky on the train, he took him.
Have you heard anything else from either of them?
Well, not from either of them. But I did get this telegram today from a Mr. J. Montgomery of the Kansas City Cattle Exchange. Only thing is, it was sent to Duff, but Duff isn't here.
He showed the second telegram to Megan.
Mr. McAllister, as per your instructions, I have assembled a herd of 480 heifers and 20 bulls of the Black Angus breed. We expected you here 1 week previous. If you are not here to take delivery of the cattle within 2 weeks, I will be forced to sell off the herd as best I can. The original $15,812.50 plus $200 per week for feeding and handling. Please reply as soon as possible. J. Montgomery.
I'm not sure what to do, Miss Parker. I mean, he wants a reply, but Duff isn't here.
Don't do anything for the moment. Since you can't deliver the telegram to him, there's nothing you can do, is there?
No, ma'am. I don't reckon there is. But I know you and Mr. McAllister are friends, so I thought you might like to know.
You were right. It is something I would like to know. And Mr. Murchison, I thank you very much for bringing this to my attention.
You're welcome. Well, I should probably get back to my office now.
Megan thought about the 2 telegrams for the rest of the day and far into the night. Around midnight, she got an idea. It took her another couple of hours to decide whether the idea was good or bad. She also had to consider whether or not Duff would agree with the idea. She finally decided that Duff wasn't here to offer any agreement or disagreement. She's going to have to make up her own mind, and that is exactly what she did. The next morning, she left the little closed sign on the window of her front door, and instead of opening her shop, she walked down the street to speak to Fred Matthews.
Well, Miss Parker, what brings you here?
Mr. Matthews? I need to raise some money.
Well, Miss Parker, you've a very good business going. I'm sure the bank will lend you some money on it. Do you owe anything on your building?
No.
Well, then you shouldn't have any trouble raising money. How much do you need?
I need $16,000.
$16,000? Miss Parker, there is no way you're going to be able to borrow that much money on your store.
I know. That's why I've come up with an idea that involves you, Mr. Guthrie, and Mr. Johnson. If I could get $4,000 from each of you, that would be $12,000, and I can come up with $4,000 on my own.
What do you want the money for?
Megan showed Matthews the telegram that had been meant for Duff. Matthews read it, then looked up.
Well, where is Duff? Why didn't he show up?
Megan showed him the telegram that Duff had sent to Elmer.
I don't know what the bit of a problem is, but I can't let Duff lose that herd. He's worked all year to get things ready. I can't let him lose it.
Megan, and if we're talking this kind of money between us, I think I should be able to call you by your given name. Do you realize what you're asking? You're asking me, and I suppose you will be asking R.W. and Biff, to loan you $4,000 when you have no collateral you can pledge. And you won't even tell us what it's for?
But you will have collateral. The herd will be collateral.
Well, I'll give you this. Nobody can say that you don't have brass. All right, now I've known you for a while, and I know you to not only be a smart business person, but a good one as well. I'll lend you the money.
Thank you. Now I have another request of you.
you just hit me up for $4,000, and you have another request. All right, let's hear it.
I want you to go with me when I talk to Mr. Guthrie and Mr. Johnson. I want you to help me talk them into going along with this.
Well, yeah, why not? They say a fool likes company.
1 hour later, Megan walked down to the bank and met with the bank president, Scott Dempster.
Now, Miss Parker, what can I do for you?
I need $16,000.
Did you say $16,000?
Yes. Actually, I will probably need $17,000.
Miss Parker, I don't know what to say. You're a very good customer, and your store is very profitable, but there's no way I can lend you $17,000.
Oh, I didn't say I wanted to borrow $17,000. I said I needed $17,000. I have $3,000 in the bank, and I want to borrow $2,000 against my store.
Oh, my. Well, yes, I suppose I can lend you $2,000 against your store, but with that and what you have in the bank, you'll still be short $12,000.
Megan slid 3 bank drafts across Dempster's desk, each one for $4,000.
This will make up the difference.
Dempster examined the bank drafts, one from Fred Matthews, one from R.W. Guthrie, and one from Biff Johnson.
You convinced these men to loan you this money?
Yes. I take it that their bank drafts are good?
Oh, absolutely. All 3 of these gentlemen are more than good for their drafts. It's just that...
It's just that what?
Well, Miss Parker, this entire thing is extremely unusual. I mean, the fact that you've convinced 3 of our finest citizens to advance you so much money, and that you are contributing even more of your own funds. May I ask what this is for? It isn't necessary that you tell me, you understand. It's just a matter of curiosity.
I'm helping a friend.
She must be some friend.
He is.
That evening, Megan worked late in her shop. It was quite a task, but she sewed 170 $100 bills inside 2 petticoats. The next morning, wearing the 2 petticoats, she bought a stagecoach ticket to Cheyenne. Fred Matthews, R.W. Guthrie, and Biff Johnson came down to the stage depot to see her off. They were sitting in the far corner of the depot, away from the rest of the passengers, so they could talk without being overheard.
Do you have the money?
Yes.
Where?
Well, I'm a seamstress, remember?
I don't understand.
Megan looked over toward the others in the depot, and then when she was sure she couldn't be seen, she lifted the hem of her skirt to show her petticoats.
In here.
Well, what a marvelous way of hiding it. There's the message he sent to Elmer, asking him to send his horse to him, the only thing anyone has heard from Duff.
Yes, as far as I know. Only from what I understand, Elmer didn't send Skye to him. Elmer took Skye to him.
I wonder what kind of trouble Duff ran into.
I don't know, but you men know Duff as well as I do, and you know damn well that he can handle just about any trouble he runs into.
Well, yeah, but if he can handle just about any trouble he runs into, well, that means that from time to time there'll be trouble he can't handle.
Damn, Fred! Do you have to look at the negative side of everything?
I'm just trying to be practical is all.
What do you think, Megan? You haven't spoken much.
I tend to agree with you that there isn't much that Duff can't handle. But I know how badly he wants that herd. And if the telegram from the cattle exchange was sent to him here, that means they haven't heard from him, and they don't know how to get a hold of him.
Look!
Duff pointed to something on the trail in front of him.
Yeah, I see it. Cigar butt.
I don't know whether 'tis ignorance or arrogance, but 'twould appear that our quarry is leading us to him like Hansel and Gretel.
Like who?
You've never heard of Hansel and Gretel? It's a fairy tale. It's a children's story about a family that's starving. So the parents lead their children into the middle of the forest, then leave them there.
They leave them there? Now what the hell do they do that for?
Because they're very short of food, and it is their hope that the children will not be able to find their way back, so that the parents will not have to share what little food they have with their children.
Good God, now them must have been some kind of parents, huh?
Aye, but the children left a trail of crumbs of bread so that they could find their way back.
Wait a minute, they left a trail of crumbs of bread? Now what kept the animals from eating it?
Nothing. That is exactly what happened. The birds ate the bread, so the children remained lost until they were found by a witch who wanted to eat them.
Great God Almighty, Duff! This is one hell of a story! This is supposed to be for children, you say?
Aye, and you're right. It does make one wonder why such a tale would be told to children. But the point is, Kingsley is doing that with his cigar butts. He's leading us directly to him.
Yeah, well, I gotta say that I do like the part about the witch eating them. Because when we find Kingsley, I might just consider that. I'm serious.
What do you mean you're serious?
You ever heard tell of a fella by the name of Liver-Eating Johnson?
Liver-Eating Johnson? I can't say that I have. 'Tis a most unusual name, I must say. Is there really such a person?
Oh, yeah. He's real, all right. He's a friend of mine. One time or another, he'd been a sailor, a scout, soldier, gold seeker, hunter, trapper, hell, whiskey peddler, wagon train captain, and a deputy sheriff. He got his name from when he went on a personal war path against the Crow Indians. Seems they killed his Indian wife, so he commenced killing them. Killed about 20 of them. Cut the liver out of everyone he killed. Then he cooked it up and he ate it. Turns out that was big medicine to the Crow. They finally decided to make peace with him.
You wouldn't really do such a thing, would you, Elmer? I mean, eat Kingsley's liver.
I might.
Duff didn't know if Elmer was serious or not, so he decided not to press the issue any further.
It looks like we're catching up with him.
Yeah, but for me, it's 25 years too late.
Aye, my friend, but as they say, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Not cold. If I eat that son of a bitch's liver, I plan to fry it up first.
Hodge Denman was at the supper table with his wife, Mary, when Mr. Terence Cooper came storming into the house. Cooper was Denman's father-in-law.
Hello, Mr. Cooper. Won't you join us for supper?
What have you done?
Father, what is it? Why are you so angry?
Your mother and I are about to lose everything, that's what it is. And it's your husband's fault.
Hodge, what is Father talking about?
I can explain.
Explain? Explain? I'm losing my farm, my house, everything I've worked for my entire life, and you can explain?
I had no choice. I needed the money. The people I was in debt to are very bad people. If I didn't pay them, they would have killed me.
So you gave them my house?
Hodge, what are you talking about? Why did you borrow from such people? Why do you need money so badly?
I didn't borrow from them. I borrowed from the bank to pay the people that I owed. It's the bank who has the mortgages, not only of your father's house, but ours as well.
If you didn't borrow from those men, how is it that you owed them so much money? I don't understand.
They were gambling debts.
Gambling? You gambled away my house?
I had no choice.
Hodge, how could you? Oh, Father, I'm so sorry. I knew nothing about this, nothing.
I know you didn't, darling. It's all the fault of this no-count bastard you married.
I won't be married to him any longer. In fact, I don't intend to spend 1 minute longer with him. Please, Father, I know I have no right to ask, but take me with you.
Oh, of course, my dear. Denman.
I'm sorry. If there is any way I can make it up to you, I will.
The only way you can make it up to me, you miserable son of a bitch, is to die.
Mary, please, give me another chance.
You got into trouble like this once before by gambling. You told me then that you'd quit, remember? But you didn't quit. And now this is worse than anything you've ever done.
Come, Mary. Let's get out of here.
I need to pack a bag.
When Mary left the room, only Denman and Cooper remained.
I had a plan to get us out of all this, and it still might work if you just give me a little more time.
I'll get myself out of it. I've already talked to the bank, and they've agreed to rewrite the loan. As far as I'm concerned, you have no time left.
Please try to understand. I was terrified. I had no choice.
You had a choice. You could have faced it like a man instead of the whimpering coward you are. Mary, are you about ready? I can't stand to be in the company of this son of a bitch for a moment longer.
Denman walked into the living room, then opened the drawer to the hall coat tree. Reaching inside, he removed a Colt 44 pistol. Then, holding it down by his side, He returned to the dining room just as Mary came out of the bedroom carrying her suitcase.
I didn't get everything. I'll come back for the rest when you've gone.
No need.
What do you mean, no need?
You won't be needing them.
Raising his hand, Denman pointed the pistol toward Cooper.
Hodge! What are you doing?
You son of a...
Denman turned the pistol toward Mary. He smiled at her, a crooked, mirthless smile. Then he raised the pistol to his own head. When Hodge Denman didn't come in to work the next morning, Jay Montgomery asked some of the other clerks who worked in the bullpen if they had any idea why he was absent.
Was he acting sick or anything yesterday?
No, sir.
Ernie Tobias occupied the desk next to Denman's desk.
We were talking yesterday about putting together a contract to sell the Angus herd. He didn't give any idea that he wouldn't be back today.
He didn't say anything to me either.
I'll say this. He's been acting mighty peculiar lately.
Peculiar? In what way?
I don't know. Just sort of peculiar.
Montgomery looked up and saw two men wearing badges standing just inside the door. He walked over to them.
I'm Jay Montgomery. May I help you, gentlemen?
I'm Deputy Pease. This is Deputy Anderson. We're from the Sheriff's Department. Was Hodge Denman one of your employees?
Yes, he is. What do you mean, was?
He's dead. According to his wife, he killed his father-in-law and then committed suicide.
Denman did such a thing? That's hard to believe.
Yes, sir. Well, we do have two bodies and Mrs. Denman's testimony. I wonder if we could look through his desk. We can get a warrant if necessary.
No, that won't be necessary. Please, come this way. I'll show you his desk.
With Montgomery watching, the deputies went through Denman's desk. Then, not finding anything that was of interest to them, they thanked Montgomery for his cooperation and left. It's true that the deputies didn't find anything, but Montgomery did. He saw the carbon copy of a letter over his signature. It was a letter he had not authorized or even read before this moment.
Dear Mr. McAllister, this is to inform you that we have received your request for 500 Black Angus cattle. We are now in the process of making the arrangements for you. However, it will be necessary for you to come in person to take delivery of your cattle. What the devil? Too often, bank drafts drawn upon small banks in remote areas of the country have been non-processed due to failure of the banks in question. Therefore, it is the policy of the Kansas City Cattle Exchange that all transactions must be conducted in cash, so we ask you to bring the money with you. This is signed in my name. This wasn't part of the agreement.
Then he saw two telegrams from McAllister.
Mr. J. Montgomery, Kansas City Cattle Exchange, departing Kansas City at 8:30 a.m. on this day. Will arrive in Kansas City at 9:30 p.m. tomorrow. We'll come to your office on the day following. Duff McAllister.
And another.
Mr. J. Montgomery, Kansas City Cattle Exchange. Have encountered unexpected difficulty. Will be delayed. Duff McAllister.
Montgomery had not seen either of these telegrams before either. In fact, Denman had specifically told him that they had heard nothing from McAllister.
Why did Denman lie to me? What the hell is going on?
When Megan arrived in Fremont, it was nearly midnight. Hiring a cab, more for the escort than the need for a ride, she had him drive her to a hotel where she took a room. The next morning, after breakfast, she called upon the city marshal. The marshal and his deputy were playing a two-hand game of poker. Both of them stood when Megan stepped into the office.
Can we help you, ma'am?
I hope so, Marshal...
Bivens, ma'am, and this is my deputy, Archer.
Deputy Archer touched the brim of his hat and nodded at her.
Marshal Bivens, I am concerned about a friend of mine. The last word any of us had heard from him was that he was here in Fremont when he sent a telegram saying that he had, as he put it, run into a bit of a problem.
Well, who is it? And did he say what the problem was?
No, he didn't say what the problem was. I was hoping you could help me with that. His name is Duff McAllister.
Duff McAllister? Scotsman, is he?
Very much the Scotsman.
Then that was him, Marshal. The same fella she's talking about.
Was him? What do you mean, was him? Please, Cutter, something happened to him.
No. I didn't mean to worry you none. I mean, something has happened to him, but he hadn't been hurt or anything like that.
What happened to him?
He was robbed.
Robbed? No, that doesn't seem possible. Duff McAllister is an extremely capable man. He is more than able to take care of himself.
Yes, ma'am, I think he probably is. But apparently the brigand who robbed him stepped out of the alley in the middle of the night and struck him from behind.
And here's the thing. They must have known he was carrying as much money as he was, because he only took the briefcase. They didn't take his wallet.
I see. Where is he now?
Oh, he found out who it was that robbed him, a murdering scoundrel by the name of Crack Kingsley. He and another fella, an older man, raw-boned, gray hair, and gray beard.
Yes, that would be his friend, Elmer Gleason.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I believe Gleason was his name. Anyhow, Mr. McAllister and Mr. Gleason, they went off after Kingsley.
Have you heard from them since they left?
Not exactly, but we've certainly heard about them.
What do you mean, you've heard about them?
Well, like you said, ma'am, it would appear that this fella McAllister can take care of himself. According to the police in Lincoln, Kingsley and three other men tried to bushwhack your friends, McAllister and Gleason. Jumped them in a saloon, it was. There was a shootout, and three of the four men who attacked McAllister were killed.
And Duff?
He wasn't hurt none at all, and neither was Gleason.
You said the police informed you of this. Are Duff and Mr. Gleason in any kind of trouble?
No, ma'am. There were enough witnesses there to tell the police exactly what happened, so there ain't no charges or anything against them.
Do you know if Duff is still in Lincoln?
I doubt it. Kingsley, the man McAllister is after, got away. Not knowing McAllister any better than I do, I'd still be willing to make a bet that he left town after Kingsley.
Yes, I'm sure he did.
Will you be going on to Lincoln to try to find him?
No. I have some business in Kansas City that I must take care of.
I don't expect him to be coming back this way. But in case he does, do you have a message for him?
Yes. Tell him that I...
Tell him what, ma'am?
Just that his friends back in Chugwater are anxious about him.
Yes, ma'am. If he comes back through here, I'll be sure and tell him that.
The little town of Plymouth, Nebraska, that rose in front of Kingsley was no more than a scattering of buildings, some of wood, some of sod. It had one street, Main, that ran through the middle of town, then a cross street, Columbus, which formed the letter X. The only buildings that were constructed of lumber were the commercial buildings, and they were all on Main Street. All the houses were constructed of sod, and they lined both sides of Columbus. Kingsley hoped the town would have a saloon, and he was gratified to see a crudely painted sign in front of one of the buildings that read, Brown Dirt Saloon. He rode up to the saloon and dismounted in front.
Hey, bartender, you got any food?
Beans, bacon, and biscuits.
That'll do fine. And a bottle of rye.
Kingsley put a $20 bill down on the bar.
You got anything smaller than this? This'll just about take every bit of change I got in the cash register.
I keep the change.
What? Mister, you sure?
I'm hungry, and I want a drink. And I want to be left alone. Will this 20 get all that for me?
Yes, sir.
I'll be over there in the corner.
Kingsley was just pouring himself a glass of whiskey when someone walked up to his table.
Hello, Crack. It's been a long time.
Looking up, Kingsley saw the man who had been his cellmate at the Nebraska State Penitentiary at Lincoln a few years earlier.
Scooter Margolis. I thought you were serving life.
Yeah. That's what Warden Wyman thought, too. Only I had other ideas. And by the way, I'm calling myself Donovan now. Pat Donovan.
Well, what are you doing in this little burg?
I'm working down at the stable. What you doing here?
Well, I'm just passing through.
You got something going, do you?
What do you mean?
I know you, Kingsley. You always got something going.
Yeah, what if I do?
I want in on it.
Oh, it ain't like you think.
It don't matter to me what it is. I'm so tired of shoveling horse shit, I'm willing to do anything. What do you got going?
Kingsley's food was brought to the table. He said nothing until the server left.
I might have something going.
Oh, I knew it! The moment I see you come into this place, I knew you was up to something. What is it?
It don't really matter what it is. But the truth is, I got a couple of people dogging my trail. And until I get rid of them, I can't do nothing else.
Who you got after you?
Bounty hunters. There's a lot of paper out on me. You too, I reckon.
Oh, yeah. Last I heard, there's $5,000 out for me. Son of a bitch, I hate bounty hunters.
Well, here's the thing. They're after me right now. But to them, one is as good as another. If they was to get wind that you was here, hell, they might even forget about me and go after you. Especially since you're worth more than I am.
Well, who are they? You know their names?
I don't know their names, but I know what they look like. And if you'll help me take care of them, I could see letting you come in on me for my next job.
Well, you ain't told me yet what your next job's gonna be.
No, I ain't. And I ain't going to till after we take care of the two bounty hunters. Are you in or not?
I don't know. I could just leave, I reckon. I mean, if they're trailing you, chances are they don't even know I'm here.
You could do that.
Kingsley put his hand inside his shirt pocket and pulled out a bound packet of $20 bills, from which a few had already been taken.
Or you could take this $400 and help me take care of the problem.
What? Where the hell did you come up with this much money?
There's plenty more where that came from. Once the bounty hunters are out of the way, are you in or not?
Oh, I'm in. Hell yes, I'm in.
Good. Now, as soon as I finish eating, we'll go set up a welcome for them.
2 miles out of town, the road crossed a stream known as Little Blue Creek. The stream could be forded, but it was deep enough to slow the horses down. Also, the stream was running very quickly, so that the horses had to fight to stay on their feet. Just beyond the stream, the road made a turn to the right. On the left side of the road, just as it made its turn, was a low-lying ridge crowned by oversized flat rocks. That created a perfect observation post from which to monitor the approaching road. It was here that Kingsley set up his ambush. He lay on top of one of the flat rocks, looking back along the trail.
Well, how do you know they'd be coming this way?
They're coming. I fixed it so they would.
Well, how'd you fix it?
Don't matter none how I did it. I did it. You just be ready.
Oh, I'm ready.
There's two of them now. I wonder where he picked up a friend. Hell, more than that, what kind of man would be a friend of his in the first place?
He has $15,000 in cash. It matters little how evil a person is. With that much money, he can buy friends.
Yeah, you got that right. Look, there's another cigar butt.
God, that's the third butt we've seen in the last mile.
Duff dismounted, picked up the cigar butt, examined it, then held it to his nose and smelled it.
It's just what I thought.
What?
This cigar hasn't even been smoked. I thought it was strange to find three of them so close together.
Damn. He's leading us on, ain't he? He's wanting us to find him.
Aye.
Yeah, well, you know what that means, don't you? That means he's planning to set up an ambush.
So it would appear.
Well, hell, we ain't gonna just ride into it, are we?
We are. But remember, forewarned is forearmed.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I just wish I knew what the hell it meant.
It means that when he springs his ambush, we shall be ready for him.
Margolis, there they are. Get ready. As soon as they get into the stream, start shooting. Their horses won't be able to react fast enough, and we'll have them dead in our sights.
What if they don't come across the creek?
They'll come. They want me too bad to hold back. Now get ready.
Both Kingsley and Margolis cocked their rifles and waited.
No!
Both men leaped down from their horses just as they approached the edge of the creek. Duff and Elmer had chosen their position perfectly, for after they leaped down from their horses, they separated, Duff getting behind a rock on the left side of the road, while Elmer found one on the right.
What the hell? Kingsley! You see him? Where'd they go?
Elmer zeroed in on the voice above him. The body came tumbling down the rise to land in the creek. Not Kingsley. Nobody moved for several moments. Then, carefully, first Duff, then Elmer came out. Not being fired upon, they ran across the creek and gradually worked their way up to the top of the rock where the shooting had been coming from. They found a few empty cartridges ejected from the rifles, but there was no one there. Kingsley had gotten away. In the hotel the night before, Megan had very carefully removed all the money from her petticoat. With the money in an attaché case, she had arrived at the Kansas City Cattle Exchange in the back of a hansom cab. Seeing any woman inside the cattle exchange office was a rarity. Seeing one as beautiful as Megan caught everyone's attention. No fewer than three men came to assist her.
I would like to speak with Mr. J. Montgomery, please.
I'm Jay Montgomery. May I help you?
I hope so. I want to buy some Black Angus cattle.
Black Angus, you say? Well, what a happy coincidence this is. It just so happens that we have quite a few Black Angus on hand. How many do you want?
I want 480 heifers and 20 bulls.
This isn't just a coincidence, is it?
Not at all.
Megan opened her attaché case and began counting out money.
I trust you will be able to arrange transportation for me and the cattle back to Cheyenne?
Yes, ma'am. We'll take care of everything for you.
Corning, Kansas.
This is the horse.
Elmer examined the rear hooves of the Pinto.
Hello, Lucky.
The horse was tied in front of the Union Saloon. Having learned from his cousin Falcon McAllister how to enter a saloon, Duff checked the place out as soon as he and Elmer stepped inside. He didn't see Kingsley or anyone else who represented a danger to him. Glancing over toward Elmer, he saw that he was doing the same thing, and, satisfied that the room was clear, they stepped up to the bar. The bartender stood behind the bar. In front of him were two glasses with whiskey remaining in them. And he poured the whiskey back into a bottle, corked it, and put the bottle on the shelf behind the bar. He wiped the glasses out with his stained apron and set them among the unused glasses.
Scotch, if you have it.
The barman reached for the bottle he had just poured the whiskey back into, but Duff shook his head.
Never mind. Beer will do.
And me too.
The bartender shrugged.
Could you be for helping us out? We're looking for someone.
This here ain't the Lost Persons Bureau.
The pinto tied up out front is the horse he rode in on. I say the horse he rode in on rather than his horse, for 'tis a stolen steed.
I can't help you, mister. What I do is pour drinks. Other than that, I mind my own business.
He's a murdering scum. He killed a young woman and her daughter.
That ain't the only woman he killed. He killed another woman, too. Only this here and he killed. He raped her before he killed her.
Are you men the law?
No.
Bounty hunters, then? I don't have much truck with bounty hunters.
Bounty hunters?
Hell no, we ain't bounty hunters.
Then what are you after this fella for?
Didn't we give you enough justification? He murders women.
You ought to let the law handle people like that.
I don't have time to wait for the law.
Is there a reward?
I'm sure there is, but 'tis no business of mine. This is personal.
What does this fella look like?
He's about medium height, gaunt of face, with a purple scar that runs from his eye down to the corner of his mouth.
Duff ran his finger down his face, illustrating the scar. The bartender didn't say anything, but Duff noticed a slight reaction to his description.
He's here right now, isn't he?
The saloon owner said nothing, but he raised his head and looked toward the stairs at the back of the room.
Thank you.
I didn't tell you nothing.
At the back of the saloon, a flight of wooden stairs led up to an enclosed loft. Duff started up the stairs, pulling his gun as he did so. Duff tried to open the first door, but it was locked.
Go away! It's your own damn woman!
What the hell?
The man stood up quickly, and Duff saw that it wasn't the man he was looking for.
You son of a bitch, get the hell out of here!
Sorry, wrong room.
Duff ran to the door the next room over, where he had heard the window break. He saw the window broken, and a breeze lifting the curtain out over the floor. Duff ran to the window and looked down, but he saw nothing. Suddenly, out of the corner of his eye, he saw in the room Kingsley holding out a knife. Duff took a vicious slash on the hand, and he dropped his pistol.
I'm gonna gut you like a fish.
Yeah. Again, Duff managed to avoid him, this time by going down on one knee. He felt around on the floor, searching desperately for the pistol he had dropped, but he couldn't find it. What he did find was a long, jagged shard of window glass. Duff picked it up and thrust upward into Kingsley's belly. Kingsley's eyes opened wide, and he dropped to his knees, with his hands clasped over the wound.
You killed me.
Aye. It seemed to be the thing to do.
No, sir. I'm sorry. Mr. Montgomery isn't here. He's going to St. Louis. My name is Ernie Tobias. I'm temporarily in charge. May I help you?
Aye, I hope so. I'm here to take possession of my cattle.
Take possession of your cattle? And what cattle would that be?
Black Angus. I believe you're holding a herd of 500 Black Angus for me. 480 heifers, 20 bulls.
Oh, yes. I wasn't here, but I think I did hear something about that. Would you be Mr. McAllister?
Aye. Then do you have them?
No, I'm sorry. Those cattle have been sold.
Sold? Why? I sent a telegram explaining that I would be delayed.
I'm afraid I'm unable to give you all the facts about it. As I said, Mr. Montgomery, who is our director, is gone. He's in St. Louis. And Mr. Denman, the man who was handling your account, is deceased. I don't have any of the specifics other than the fact that the herd of Black Angus has been sold.
The train ride back to Cheyenne was frustrating. Duff had encountered and overcome obstacle after obstacle, only to be denied the goal of acquiring a herd of Black Angus.
Oh, now you ain't give up, have you?
I don't know. Maybe it'd be easier just to raise Herefords, or even Longhorns.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
Elmer, you're the one who said it was foolish for me to try and introduce Black Angus to Wyoming. You, and as a matter of fact, just about everyone in Chugwater, said that I should raise Longhorns or Herefords.
Yeah, well, that was then. This is now. You done been through too much to give up on them now. I say, as soon as we get back home, you should wait until this Montgomery fella gets back into his office, then you order you some more Black Angus. You got most of the money back from Kingsley. This time, when you go to get them, I'll go with you.
I appreciate it. But I'm tired of having a cattle ranch without cattle. I think I'll just stock it with whatever I can buy here. It's not like there aren't any cattle available.
That ain't what you want, though, is it?
It'll do.
That ain't what you want, though, is it?
Duff smiled, put his hand on his friend's shoulder, squeezed it, then leaned his head back on the seat to take a nap. Two days later, after offloading their horses from the attached stock car, they rode back to Sky Meadow.
What the hell? Duff, you hear that?
Aye, I do hear it. The question is, what is it?
Sounds like cattle.
Aye, it is cattle, but why are we hearing cattle? There shouldn't be any cattle here. I don't have any cattle, and I have the only ranch in this area.
Two men urged their horses into a trot. Then, as they came over the last ridge, they had a panoramic view of Sky Meadow spread out below them. Gathered along the banks of both the Bear and Little Bear Creeks were large clusters of cattle. They weren't just any cattle. They were Black Angus cattle.
Where did these cattle come from? And look, the barn has been rebuilt. Elmer, do you know anything about this?
I swear to you, Duff, I don't know a thing about this. This here has me as bamboozled as it does you.
Well, let's find out, shall we?
Seeing the two horses approach at a gallop, the cattle parted as they rode through. A rider came toward him from the bunkhouse. Duff recognized him as one of the local cowboys.
Excuse me, but what are you doing here? It's Woodward, isn't it?
Yes, sir. My name is Al Woodward.
Hello, Al. Now I'll ask you again, what are you doing here?
I'm keeping an eye on your cows, me and Case Martin and Brax Walker. Right now they're both down at the other end of your property rounding up some of the cows that wandered off. These here cows sure is pretty. I ain't never seen cows like these before.
How did these cattle get here?
Well, me and Case and Brax brung them down from Cheyenne after they come in on the railroad. Mr. Matthews, he hired us. And seeing as you ain't got no other cowboys working for you, well, he hired us to stay here and keep an eye on them till you come back. So that's what we done, and the truth is, why, the boys was kind of hoping you'd hire us on for good.
You want me to hire you?
Yes, sir, we do. We'd make good hands for you, Mr. McAllister. I promise you that we would. Besides which, you got the nicest bunkhouse any of us have ever been in.
Have you already been paid to bring the cattle down?
Yes, sir. We was paid for that, and we done been paid for the rest of the month, because didn't nobody know how long it would be before you come back.
Who built the barn?
Well, sir, Mr. Guthrie, he brung out all the material, the lumber and such, and the three of us built it.
And you want to work for me?
Yes, sir.
Well, you're hired. This is Elmer Gleason. He is the foreman, and you will answer to him. Have you any problem with that?
No, sir, we ain't got no problem with that at all.
You stay here, Elmer. I'm going into town to see what this is all about.
When Duff called upon Fred Matthews to see why there were Black Angus cows on his ranch, Matthews said that his subject could best be discussed over coffee and pie at Vi's Pie. When they stepped inside, Duff saw R.W. Guthrie, Biff Johnson, and Megan Parker sitting at a table. There were two empty chairs at the table.
Take a seat, gentlemen. Duff? I baked a fresh cherry pie this morning. I know that's your favorite.
Aye. Thank you, Vi. Now, is this going to be a secret forever? Or is someone going to tell me what's going on?
Fred, you be our spokesman.
Matthews told Duff how they had gotten word that he had experienced a bit of difficulty, and how they had also heard from the Kansas City Cattle Exchange that they would be forced to sell off the herd if he didn't show up in 2 weeks.
Well, it was all Megan's idea. She knew how badly you wanted those black cows, though I still haven't figured out why. And she came to me, R.W. and Biff, and then she put in her own money. And all of us, together, raised enough to buy the herd in order to prevent him from selling the cows out from under you. She took the money to Kansas City, bought the herd, and put them on the train back here. Now, I hired three cowboys to meet the train and drive the cows down to your ranch.
Duff, I hope we weren't out of line in this. If we were, and if you're angry with anyone, please be angry with me and not with them. I'm the one who talked them into going along with the idea.
Angry? How can I be angry? 'Tis wondering I am how a Scotsman like me, barely a year in this country, could have made as wonderful friends as the four of ye.
Duff, you're an honest and good-hearted man. Well, how hard is it to be friends with such a man?
The bit of trouble I encountered was in being robbed. But I've recovered the money, and I'll be repaying all of you with interest and my thanks.
Oh, no interest needed. Your thanks is enough.
Not for me.
Megan. You want interest on your loan?
No interest, and no loan. I own 1/4 of the herd, and I'm not selling.
What?
We're going to be partners, Duff McAllister. One way or another.
Aye. Partners.
McAllister, Book 2, The Killing, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Keegan, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Nick DePinto, Christopher Graybill, Eric Mesner, Danny Gavigan, Michael Glenn, Bradley Smith, Dylan Lynch, Tim Carlin, Kimberly Gilbert, David Korn, Johan Detweiler, Scott McCormick, Tim Pabone, Lily Beacon, Ken Jackson, Jeff Allen, Casey Platt, Christopher Sheeran, Thomas Penny, Joe Bratt, Nanette Savard, James Konachek, Evan Casey, Yasmin Quazan, Gary Tells, Sherry Bird, and Joel Santner. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaway. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas. Additional music by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed McAllister, Book 2, The Killing, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to listen to William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, Preacher, the First Mountain Man, Blood Valley, and The Family Jensen. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-6220. Or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Now here's a surprise.
Are you alone?
At the moment. Raymond, aren't you supposed to be dead?
Not that I know of.
How did he die?
They said you both died on Olympus Creek. Are we correct in assuming that you are no longer working with the Unified Authority?
Yes, sir. That would be a correct assumption.
Are you fugitives?
Enemies might be a better description.
Arthur tracked the Avatari signal to Boda's galaxy. The Navy should have sent a fleet to destroy their home world by now.
Admiral, we have lost 3/4 of our fleet. We no longer have the firepower we need to carry out our mission. We must return to Earth. We must report that we have located the aliens and request a larger fleet and more troops. As the Master Chief has suggested, we should have our SEALs open the way and send in Marines.
What do you suggest, Master Chief?
Maybe we should return to Earth.
We should return?
We should return and report what we have found. If we attack now and we fail, everything we have learned will be lost. We need to make our report, then launch our attack. We're not here to defeat this enemy. We need to destroy them.
Kill him, Harris! Well, that's an order!
Any last words?
Look, we got all kinds of stuff. I promise, I'll give you half of everything. No, all of it. All of it, I'm good for it.
Sounds like you've got the golden goose. Maybe I should let you go.
Oh, you won't be sorry. You won't. You're gonna be rich.
We meet right here, day after tomorrow. If you're not here with enough swag to fill a transport, you're a dead man. Get out of here.
Why did you let him go?
Didn't you hear? He's going to make me rich.
You're never going to see him again.
Damn straight I'm not going to see him again. Why the spec do you think we evacuated this planet? In 3 hours, the city's going to be dust. And that bastard is going to be dust along with it.
I told you to kill him. You disobeyed a direct order.
Yeah, we need to talk about that. Admiral, I'm relieving you of command.
You're what?
These are dire times, Admiral. And you're not fit for command.
Who the hell do you think you're speaking to?
Admiral Stephen R. Jolly, enlisted man's Navy, retired.
You can't do this!
Captain Holman, how much do you know about ancient Rome?
I know about the Praetorian Guard.
Really? Are you a fan of the classical age?
Not until recently. Am I looking down the barrel of a promotion?
A big one.
What about Admiral Jolly?
Shot by a looter. That was on Gobi. You saw the report.
And now you're placing me in charge?
I have every confidence in you.
Did you have every confidence in Admiral Jolly?
I was obligated to give him a shot because of his seniority.
You killed him.
Not me. It was the looter.
Are you gonna kill me if I screw up?
I need a commander. Are you in or out?
I'm in.
Glad to hear it. You couldn't have taken this post at a better time. We're about to launch a sensitive operation.
Captain! There's something out there!
Where?
I'm changing course!
Shields up!
They're robotic! I'm detecting a signal!
Clear path! We need to break through!
Know this, gentlemen. Our only chance of survival is to establish a colony on a planet that the aliens have already attacked. We are going to colonize Terrano. As many of you know, the Unified Authority patrols that area. Our barges will be vulnerable. The Navy has asked a lot of you over the last month, and you have delivered. Now I'm going to ask even more of you than ever. Some of you will be asked to make the ultimate sacrifice. In order for this plan to work, we will need to draw the UA fleet away from Providence, Cree, and Terran. That means opening a front that will draw the Unified Authority's forces away. We are going to invade Earth.
Stephen L. Kent. Rogue Clone. Book 7. The Clone Redemption.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.